Today on Inside Utah Politics, the Senate prepares to take on election reform, how chamber leadership is reacting to controversial proposals from the House, and preparing for 2034, how state and local Olympians hope to make the most out of our 9-year runway. The pitch to stop changing the clocks may have to wait. We unpack the daylight saving debacle and more in this week's Capitol Hill headlines.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm Lindsay Ehrts, live on location at the Utah State Capitol. Let's go Inside Utah Politics. Now, we're heading into the final days of the legislative session, and election reform still hasn't crossed the finish line. House Bill 300 would require Utahns to return their ballots in person by default. It's been circled on the House floor for weeks awaiting changes. Well, now, Senate leadership is promising an overhaul.
Senator McKell, thanks for being here.
You know what? Thank you for having me, and congratulations on the new job with ABC4.
Thank you. It's been a really fun ride so far, and cool. I appreciate you joining me. Okay, let's talk elections, because earlier in the session, we saw a big House bill come through. This would mail people ballots, but make them take them back in, require them to return them in person. A lot of consternation about that proposal, but the Senate's gotten a hold of it now, and you're saying a little bit that you might change that policy.
Yeah,
how so?
I don't want to say we're going to change the policy. We're working with the House. We're at week five, and we've been meeting with the House regularly. My colleagues in the Senate want to preserve vote by mail. You've looked at the data. You've looked at the polling. As I've met with my constituents, one thing that's clear to me is voters do want security, and I think the House is right that we need to find a way to enhance the security. But voters really do like the convenience of vote by mail, especially in rural Utah. Several of my rural colleagues in the Senate have really been vocal that they want to make sure vote by mail is preserved. And as we've been negotiating with the House, that's a principle that we've pushed really hard on. And I think we're making progress. We're working closely with the House. I think in the next week, you're going to see a really good bill.
Okay, so give me some specifics, because right now you say you want it to preserve vote by mail.
Yeah.
Is that an admission almost that the current one doesn't do that? It requires you to return it in person, although there's a mail-in option.
I think the current version, I think you're going to see a substitute from the House. Some of the concerns I think that we've had, and I think we've talked about, you and I have talked about, is I think the opt-in for vote by mail was pretty onerous in the original House version. But credit to the House. The House has an issue that they want to solve. And when I look at some of the polling, people do want to make sure that we find a way to enhance security. So the goal for me working with the House is how do we enhance security and at the same time preserve vote by mail? And if we're going to have an opt-in process, how do we make that really, really easy? And that's what we're working on right now in the negotiation.
So do we write for numbers of our ID number on the back of our ballot envelope? Is that the security piece? Will that suffice, or does it have to be an all ID or nothing?
That's actually a concept that the clerks have brought forward. So the League of Cities and Towns, the Utah Association of Counties have brought, I call it the kind of the UAC proposal, having your driver's license on that ballot when you mail it back. I think that does enhance security. The other thing I like about that proposal is voters are concerned about timeliness in getting results and verifying that driver's license number through the process. I think it speeds it up, and I think there's always been some concern that we're slower than other states. And one of the principles that we have looked at as the Senate and the House, I think we're aligned. We want it to be faster, and I think voters want it to be faster.
So do we change the postmarking deadline? Because right now it's the day before Election Day. You have to have it postmarked, but the complaint from some is that allows ballots to come in way after Election Day. So long as they were postmarked ahead of time, they count. I think you supported the idea before of making so the ballot has to be into the clerk's office by 8 p.m. on Election Day.
Yeah, I actually like that proposal, and that's something we're still negotiating. We've talked about having a postmark Friday before. We've talked about a firm deadline at 8 o'clock. If you look at the Thurston proposal, for example, it's a firm 8 o'clock, and I personally like having a firm deadline. I think if we have a firm deadline, I think that changes the way people vote. I think if you're up against that deadline, I think you're going to use a drop box. You probably won't use the Postal Service. If you're going to use the Postal Service, that's fine, but you're going to get it in earlier. For me, I like that firm deadline, but I think that's a discussion that we're still having. If you look at the Thurston bill, for example, in the House, that's kind of the proposal he has. I personally like that language. I think it creates a scenario where voters are taking responsibility for their vote.
So back to the security issue. When I talked to the House Speaker about that security issue, he is really adamant about the ID, right, and showing ID. And I know you're saying this is going to be written on the back of the ballot envelope. Is that sufficient for him and for the House to get support? Because you all are saying we won't support it if you change mail-in voting, and he's saying we won't support it if you change the ID component. So have you come to a resolution?
Yeah, and obviously that's a question for the Speaker. I will say this. I've enjoyed working with the Speaker. Obviously, he's got concerns, and we've been working closely, but that's a better question for the Speaker. And what I appreciate about the Speaker is he really wants to address that security concern. When you look at the national polling, voters are concerned about making sure it's secure, making sure ID is used. And I think the Speaker, I don't want to put words in his mouth. It's better for you to have that conversation with the Speaker, but I think he really is concerned about making sure that ID is used. And so we're working closely together.
Okay, so we're gonna get a new proposal that makes some changes. It preserves that ability to use the mail to return it, not have to return it in person. We're not going to staff the ballot boxes anymore.
That's a proposal that's still in the House bill. So we're still negotiating on that issue. But I do think you're gonna see a proposal that'll come over that'll be released next week. I think some of those questions will be answered. We're still working out those details.
Okay, so next week is when you expect this to come forward.
Yeah. I mean, we've got 2 weeks to go, right? We have a 7-week session. We have 2 weeks to go. So I hope to see a proposal out at some point next week.
Before we switch to another topic, just broadly kind of comment on why the need to change elections in any way right now. I know the clerks often feel like it's death by a thousand cuts, right? Why do we need to change anything?
Well, I guess to your point, there's broad confidence in our elections. I think we've seen that in polling, right? We saw that through the Hinckley polling. We saw that through the Sutherland polling. But there is definitely some polling that increasing security is a good thing. There is definitely some polling asking for increases. I've done some polling even in my own area, and that was reflected. There was, in the polling that I did, it was clear that there is broad support for our current system, but looking for ways to improve security is something we should do. Finding ways to add confidence, I think that's always wise.
Okay, we'll look forward to that proposal next week then. Thank you for talking to us about it. Switching topics now, you do have a controversial proposal.
Oh, I don't have a controversial bill.
It's never controversy, right? There's a proposal dealing with government records and a change of the State Records Committee. For the everyday viewer who maybe doesn't, file grandma requests like we do in the media or some concerned citizens do, the records request, when you file a public records request and that gets denied by a state agency, you can appeal that to the State Records Committee. And then eventually up to a court if it still stays denied. Yeah. There's a presumption that government records are public, right? And we have laws saying here's when it's not public. Mm-hmm. So your bill would change the makeup of that State Records Committee. Just talk to me about why you feel that was necessary.
Yeah. So right now we've had a huge uptick in cases, and we've had a huge uptick in backlog. And when I look at the issue, the question for me is if it's my constituent reaching out, trying to get records, that backlog is about 156 days. It's just too long. Statutorily, we are supposed to have a hearing within 73 days. That's simply not happening in cases. So the proposal I have is to change the records committee to a version where we would use somebody like an administrative law judge to speed up that process. Somebody who is dedicated on the ground looking at that request on a very rapid basis and staffed to do that. We've had a backlog for years, and one thing that I think was kind of lost in the committee hearing that we had is there have been multiple audits, both from the governor's office, both from the legislature. There was a follow-up audit from the legislature, and what we've learned is these requests are taking way too long, and frankly, the state is losing millions of dollars. We had testimony from the director of risk management, state of Utah. As a state, we have been exposed to millions of dollars. That's taxpayer money. And the process is just too long, and it's been a problem for years, and we're trying to address it. Anytime you talk about grandma, anytime you talk about public records, it's a tough issue. You say controversial, Controversial or not, we need to tackle hard issues, and that's what we're trying to do.
How does moving the committee from seven people to one person speed up the process?
That's a great question. So with seven people right now, you have to have quorum, you have to have people meet. And with seven people, the idea right now with the records committee is they meet every 30 days, and we've just struggled to get people in the room. Having a dedicated attorney running the office, it's just faster. You're going to have staff, you're going to be able to process it, almost like a judge.
Does it give that one person too much power?
I think that's a good question that we debated in the committee. Obviously, there were some questions from members of the public. That's something we're still looking at. We do want to continue to work on the bill and make sure that that individual does have some good independence. But let me tell you the other thing that's important to know. There's always been two paths for records. You could always go to the district court, and we're going to preserve two paths. But for me, having administrative law judge getting out there processing those records quick, I think that's a better process. But that other path is always available as well.
You got accused in the committee of running this bill because you're the brother-in-law of the governor. What do you want to say to that? He was the subject, and he and his campaign were the subject of a lot of grandma requests when it came to their signatures to get on the ballot. What do you want to say to that?
I mean, it was an interesting attack. It was interesting that there were a number of personal attacks. This is a priority for the legislature. That's why I'm running the bill. This model of having the governor pick, Senate confirm, we do that with our judges. That's the model we use today. The records committee today is appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. So the process isn't different. It was unfortunate to see some of those personal attacks. I always joke with you. The first bill that the governor vetoed was a bill that I sponsored. Last session, Andrew Stoddard ran a bill that I sponsored in the Senate that the governor vetoed.
That's all for show. Well, it's just to throw us off the scent.
It definitely didn't feel like for show for me. I think we had some pretty good policy, but yeah. You know, I've been subject to two governor vetoes at this point, so the attacks probably, you know, simply put, were not fair and probably inappropriate.
Senator Mike McCall, thank you for diving into both the elections and the state records committee proposal that you're running. Obviously, a member of Senate leadership there. Still ahead, Utah's bringing back the Olympics. So what happens next? Our next guest has some ideas about where to start.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ahrens.
Welcome back to Inside Utah Politics. Now, work on the 2034 Winter Olympic Games has officially begun. State and Olympic officials have named a 25-person organizing committee led in part by a familiar face here on Capitol Hill. Former Utah House Speaker Brad Wilson joins committee president Fraser Bullock and Utah business executive Steve Starks at the helm. Now, Wilson will help organizers navigate issues on a state level. And even though Utah is well positioned to host with many past venues intact and operational, Wilson tells me he wants to get the whole state on board with preparation.
One of the things we're going to do is we're going to go around the state and listen to people, try to find out what they're looking for in the next Olympics, and try to find out how they want to be engaged.
Now, some of the work on engaging the public starts right here on the Hill in our first general session, since snagging the bid. Representative John Hawkins, you are the chair of the Olympic Coordinating Committee here at the legislature. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining me. Okay, obviously everyone is so excited about the Olympics, even though they're still 9 years away.
Yeah.
But we have some heavy rocks to lift before we get to 2034. In your mind, what are those big rocks?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. People are really excited about the Olympics coming back to Utah. We have that Olympic spirit. We've never really lost it since 2002. And part of that is because we have phenomenal venues that we built for 2002 that people use all the time, whether you're a professional athlete, world-trained athlete, world-class athlete, or a community member just walking around the track at the Oval, right? Mm-hmm. These facilities are used. And so we need to invest as part of our state responsibility in those facilities, keeping them up to date, and just enhancing them as we go along. And so they're well loved, and they're the same facilities that we're going to use in 2034.
Let's talk about one of those facilities, the Provo Ice Arena. This is the only venue that's going to be off the I mean, it's along the Wasatch Front, but yeah, out of Salt Lake Metro, right? There may be some mountain ones, obviously. But down in Provo, the Peaks Ice Arena has expansion needs. It needs like new paint because it still says 2002 on it, right? It needs a new logo. Where do those funds come from? How do we pay for that? Is that one of those things that you see as a community benefit that we invest in, and then it also can apply to the Olympics?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, you know, it is one that the community uses. You're right, it does still say 2002. Mm-hmm. I loved what they did at the airport with the sign that said 2002 and 2034. And so, you know, maybe that's the paint job that they need, but it is an Olympic complex, Olympic facility that will be used, and you know, it's well loved by the community. So the appropriation that the legislature made even before we got the bid has some funds that are designated for the Peaks Ice Arena down below.
What other legislative fixes have to happen for the Olympics?
Well, one that's, I think, pretty simple is a bill that I'm running this year is HB 321. You know, we set up this committee that you talked about, the Olympic Coordinating Committee. When we set it up, it was to work with the bid committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have a bid committee anymore.
It dissolved. We have a host committee.
Yeah. It dissolved in December. The host committee was formed, as you know, last Friday, and so now we have no one to deal with. You know? And so we got to change the language of that, which should sail through pretty quickly, and so we'll be able to have some oversight still with our coordination with the host committee. And so that's kind of, I wouldn't call it a big rock, but it's, you know, some language that we ought to change.
A technical fix more is what we do here at the legislature. Okay, I see transportation as a big issue when we're addressing the Olympics. We have done stories here at ABC4 on air taxis, the proposals there. The Senate president has been very clear about double tracking front runner. What do you see as the biggest transportation fixes to, as the world comes into Utah, we got to get people places.
So I started my career in Washington, D.C. at a public relations firm, and I rode the Metro there and got used to, you know, the Metro system. It was pretty reliable. It was clean. It was, you know, most of the people that commuted in and out of D.C. used the Metro. We don't have that culture here, but I think, you know, double tracking, front runner, building some more tracks lines, creating an infrastructure for air taxis, I'm actually really excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think all of those are needs that we need to figure out how we can best, you know, come together to move the world when it comes to Utah to these different Olympic venues and different cultural sites as well.
I've seen some criticism online that we don't use rail in the way we should, and we're sort of skipping the rail step and going right to the air, right, with the air taxis.
Sure.
I mean, do you think that's a fair criticism? Should we be investing more in that? Or do you think the air taxis are more the future that's going to get us there?
Look, I love rail. And I think rail does a phenomenal job in freeing up traffic on the freeways. So I would agree that, you know, rail is a great way to move people. It's efficient. It's, despite what people might think, it's actually really environmentally friendly. And so I think, you know, we do need to build that infrastructure as well. But, you know, the future of travel is the Jetsons type of travel, right? Where,
sure,
where we're scooting along through the air, you know? And so, you know, I think we need to have a multi-pronged approach to how we move people, whether it's on our freeway, which I don't think we should be expanding, maybe improving, but not necessarily expanding because there's nowhere to go. You know, rail, air as well. So
we saw a big bill come out this week on revitalizing our downtown. Those are in the works. We had Salt Lake City raise the sales tax there so they could help redo the Delta Center. Now we've got this plan to sort of redo the convention center in downtown, and that's the next piece of the puzzle for the downtown revitalization. How does that fit in with Olympic planning?
You know, I think it's all about, you know, helping our city grow in the right way, you know, and our state grow in the right way. And so Well, I don't think it's necessarily tied to the Olympics. If we can beautify our capital city through these measures, you know, I think that's something that we need to do so that we can showcase to the world what Utah is really all about. And so, you know, it'll be exciting to see what changes are proposed and what ideas come out of that planning. But I think, you know, it's the Salt Lake. Salt Lake is our capital city, and it is the home of the Olympics. And so if we can beautify it, it's wonderful.
In our last 30 seconds, is there anything you're worried about that we haven't addressed yet that we need to fix before 2034?
I think the biggest thing is we talk about we're 9 years away. 9 years seems like it's a long ways away. When we're talking about these huge projects, we got to get going. They'll take a long time to really plan out properly, fund, develop. So I don't think it's a huge thing that we need to fix. We just need to focus on it.
We need to get going.
Yeah.
Representative John Hawkins, thank you so much for joining me today. Coming up next, we're going to hit some of the headlines from this week at the legislature. Stay with us. All right, before we wrap up for the day, let's run through some other bills stirring some conversation here at the Capitol and beyond. It's been a roller coaster week for the push to keep Utah on standard time. Now, after moving quickly through the House, House Bill 120 hit a roadblock in the Senate Business and Labor Committee. They tabled the bill. Well, proponents of that bill pointed to broad public support of golf courses and construction companies worried that it would hurt their business.
If the bill passes, my family will be better off. The same is true for the hundreds of thousands of families with young children in Utah.
So the effect of this bill on the construction industry will force them into working into the heat of the day during the hot months of the year.
Now, despite that, the bill popped back up on a committee agenda just a day later. We're definitely going to keep an eye on this one. The legislature is also on track to pass a bill that one Democrat compared to money laundering on the House floor. Senate Bill 37 would change the flow of school property tax funding. Now, right now, local property taxes go directly to local school districts, and they collect interest on that revenue. Well, this bill instead would send it to a state account, which would then send back the money out of the income tax fund to the school districts based on the weighted enrollment statistics. Now, House Democrat Jennifer Daly Provo tried to amend the bill, implying something underhanded was going on.
Without mincing words, I feel that the underlying bill is, unfortunately, could be defined as money laundering. And I think that this is a way that we can avoid bad optics on inappropriate moving of money between the funds.
Now, the bill passed the House and Senate without Daily Provo's changes. It now heads to the governor's desk. House Bill 355 is waiting on a floor vote in that chamber. Now, this is a dense bill. It amends what privileges critical infrastructure has in development. The bill itself says the goal is to bring those laws more in line with mining regulations. But one eye-catching provision would clarify that those operating these quarries have a presumed right to expand their operations to new land. That could have implications for controversial developments like the push to expand the gravel and limestone quarries up Parley's Canyon. Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure you reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. Also, follow along with us on social media. I'm on X, Blue Sky, and Threads at Lindsay on Air. Also on Instagram, you can just search for Lindsay Ertz. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, ABC4 is on social media to follow along no matter where you are. You can download the ABC4 News app. We're always on. Thanks for being with us, everyone. We'll see you next week.